Welcome back to Lake Effect Weekend. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. In the early 1840s, Wisconsin had high enough population numbers to become a state. There was a mix of native peoples, Northeasterners, and those from the Upper South. Many came here because of the lead rush in the 1820s and then decided to stay.
There was also a substantial population of black people, whose arrival can be traced back to the 1720s. Many came to Wisconsin with French fur traders, others with Southern officers, and some arrived as enslaved people. But despite their long history living in the region, black men were not allowed to vote when Wisconsin became a state in 1848.
Dr. Christy Clark Pujara is an associate professor of Afro-American Studies at UW-Madison. She believes Wisconsinites need to own this part of our history and understand the steps it took to get where we are today. In this edition of Radio Chipstone, Clark Pujara introduces contributor Jonifer Fields to Ezekiel Gillespie and his fight for black male suffrage in Wisconsin.
By the time we're getting to 1846, there's virtually no enslaved black people. But the question is, are they going to be part of the state or apart from the state? Are they going to be voters? Are they going to shape the state's first institutions? Are they going to be recognized as citizens? And that is what really the question is. And one of the reasons that the 1846 Constitution did not pass muster, did not get enough votes, was because it was a contentious idea to even consider black male suffrage in 1846. And this is true throughout the North. Black men, for the most part, are barred from voting.
So now who is allowed to vote at this time period?
Well, in 1846, it's not a state yet, but the people who are voting on whether or not it's going to be a state are all white men. And then when we get to the 1848 Constitution, the one that passes, that establishes Wisconsin as a state, it is very clear who can vote, who's going to be a part of things. And those are white men, and whiteness even supersedes citizenship. So if you read the actual language from the original 1848 Constitution, it says that foreign-born white men over the age of 21 who declare an intention to become a citizen can also vote, because whiteness and citizenship have been so conflated in America and in the state of Wisconsin at that point that whiteness supersedes citizenship. Now, Native Americans can also vote, but there are some very specific terms under which they can vote. They have to be U.S. citizens. Most of them weren't, right, and are not going to be into the 20th century. And they had to denounce any affiliation with a tribe. So basically, they had to become culturally white in order to vote. So again, whiteness is setting the bar for voting. And because the term white is used, it is barring black men from voting.
So let's talk about Ezekiel Gillespie.
So Ezekiel Gillespie is living and working in Milwaukee, and he is part of a black community that is small, but very aware that they have been marginalized. And an example of that would be when the Republican Party made universal male suffrage part of its party platform, African Americans met in Milwaukee, said that they were going to support this with everything they had, and had their proceedings published in the local paper, right? They want people to know that they're aware of what's going on, that they understand that they are marginalized and not treated as full citizens, right? Ezekiel Gillespie also goes to a mass meeting in 1865 about suffrage, and this is drawing blacks from all over the state in Wisconsin. And so he is one of those people who is involved, politically involved, and pushing back against their political marginalization, which they understand is directly connected to their economic and social marginalization. And this is a community that is marginalized in every way you can imagine. So it's a poor community. They are a severe minority, right? They are, you know, less than a couple percent of the state's population. And so they are vulnerable in all kinds of ways. But they also went out of their way to make their demands on citizenship known. And so he tries to vote, and he tries to vote in more than one election. And in the 1865 election, he tries to vote with the intention of being turned away, because he's going to then work with Sherman Booth to sue that he should have the right to vote as a citizen.
And who is Sherman Booth at this time period? What would lead him to take the case?
Sherman Booth is one of a small group of active white abolitionists in the state of Wisconsin. And I use the term active very intentionally. Many whites in the state of Wisconsin were anti-slavery. There were very few people who were actually abolitionists, meaning those who are actively working to destroy the institution of slavery.
Was one of the excuses or reasons for not allowing black male suffrage at this time period, was it number? Was it tied to the population is so small? What difference would it make?
No. It's simple racism at this point, meaning that in the 1840s, the United States of America is a country that supports and protects the institution of race-based slavery. And slavery is not a regional institution, it is a national one that is supported North and South, that is invested in by Northerners and Southerners. And so it's not surprising that Northerners contested black suffrage. Of course they did. Free black people were an anomaly. When you have a system in which race is used as a justification why an entire group of people is held in perpetual bondage and treated as simple chattel in law, free black people interrupt that. And so they themselves, by just existing, are an anomaly and are an affront to the justification of race-based slavery in which the U.S. economy is grounded.
Christy, we have Ezekiel going to vote. Walk me through the timeline of what happens after that.
So he's turned away and he files suit. He files suit at the local level and he loses, and he knows he's going to lose. It gets to the state Supreme Court, and the state Supreme Court looks at his case, and they don't say that black men should vote because it's morally right or they're citizens. They say that the State Board of Canvassers wrongly interpreted a referendum on black male suffrage in 1849. So a year after Wisconsin becomes a state, in 1849, there is a referendum on black male suffrage. So it's put on the ballot. And so everybody that's voting is a white man above the age of 21 and a few Native Americans who are citizens and have denounced any affiliation with a tribe. And so in that referendum on black male suffrage, it was approved by a vote of 5,265 to 4,075. However, 31,759 voters did not vote on the referendum at all. They left it blank. The State Board of Canvassers interpreted those absentee ballots as no's and said that there was a bar on black men voting. What the Supreme Court decides in 1866 is that the Board of Canvassers wrongly interpreted those absentee ballots, and they should have just only considered those who actually voted. And so for 17 years, black men in Wisconsin are disenfranchised, unable to participate in the creation and the shaping of the state's first institutions on a legal technicality. But what I find particularly interesting is that in two subsequent referendums on black male suffrage, one in 1855 and one in 1865, nearly all voters vote on the black male suffrage issue, and they vote no. And that would have been the end of it, save Ezekiel Gillespie's suit.
As this is going on, is there a seat of black power in Wisconsin? Are we focused in Milwaukee? What happens once he sues and it's overturned?
If there is a seat of black power, and it's a very small population, it is going to be in Milwaukee. And what happens is black people vote, right? And they are part of the electorate, but the vote is not the, you know, doors opening to freedom. And a very clear example of that would be over 100 years later, the black commandos are walking down the street with people like Val Phillips and Father Grappi fighting for open housing, right? And so the vote does not open up the floodgates of liberty and justice to African Americans. It just gives them an opportunity to participate in the electorate. But again, that's only applying to black men. Black women are not going to be able to vote until 1920. But the vote is one of the first things. It isn't the last and only thing.
Material culture contributor Jennifer Fields curates the Radio Chipstone series. The project is funded by the Chipstone Foundation, a decorative arts foundation whose mission is preserving and interpreting their collection, as well as stimulating research and education in the decorative arts.
This week, Jennifer spoke with Dr. Christy Clark Pujara of the Afro-American Studies Program at UW-Madison.